Hello, everybody. This is a Q&A section with James Vickery from Australia. So he had a really kind of cool, thought-provoking and challenging and mind-blowing questions to me. So I was wondering how to answer those. So we were figuring out that we do it in from hip. So it's like just fire up this quick chat and we start to talk about what he's interesting on. So just, James, just please introduce yourself on your like size and your company, what MSP is running to, what's your challenges and what's the state. So it's just get more context of your questions. So welcome.
Sure. Thanks, Dennis. So I'm James Vickery from iKnow IT. We're a service provider, managed service provider based in Sydney. And we've been in business for about 11 years. So we've been through the process that I think a lot of IT providers have been through, from break fix IT through to managed services, now through to cloud services, and then looking at, you know, the landscape ahead into software as a service, or this particular model that you've brought to us around reframing and becoming the virtual CIO.
Cool.
Challenges. Reframing. So the challenge in terms of talking to our clients, not about, you know, boxes and widgets and antivirus software and all the things that kind of you know, they probably wanted to talk to us about some years ago, but are now kind of seen as kind of default, that, you know, that we really should be doing that kind of stuff anyway, and shaping the discussion around the tools that they're using, how they're using those tools, who they should be procuring their services from when it comes to the numerous vendors that are out there in the kind of cloud and SaaS space.
It's a bit of challenges, I hear. Okay, and what's the exact question you want to ask? So it's like why you are not able to sleep at night?
I sleep okay, but the challenge, I think, well, my question to you about this about reframing and about you know, being a virtual CIO, is I think that for us, we've put a lot of energy into building a business that you know, you would hope grows, that you hire people that can sit in the various positions within the organization and you can scale. And with the virtual CIO approach, my question is, how do you scale a virtual CIO business? How do you find and replicate what you do as the owner? So when you're taking them through the survey and you're taking them through strategy and you're implementing all this stuff, and it requires monthly meetings or quarterly reviews, project management, all of those sort of things that tend to sit quite well with the owner, but finding other people that will do that, you know, how do you scale? How do you do it?
Okay. That's the question. Yeah, that's. I think that's a valid question, because we are talking about something which is by nature is a consulting business. Usually the consulting business, like law firms or traditional business consultants, is really low level scalability. So you know how these like law firms are operating, that it's pretty hard to create a company, create a business from those. We were really lucky in I think, because, you know, we have these other businesses, and I was a CEO, and I wanted to grow this business, and I became a coach of a really special framework called Six Disciplines. And these Six Disciplines is a general strategy building and strategy execution practice. And that was the first ever I seen was based on managed, like, recurring service based. So that was like a consulting service when you were paying monthly fees and, you know, yearly fees for like the bigger jobs. And I was really intrigued, and I became a coach, and we put this practice in Hungary. So I was building that in Hungary like a couple of years ago. And And basically, that was the big idea behind this whole virtual CIO model, because our virtual CIO model is on a fixed fee basis. And if it's a fixed fee basis, that means not just the pricing model is what I think is important. The whole model is around that you have processes, you know what you want to do, you know your boundaries. You know what you are doing in the cycles, like in weekly cycles, monthly, quarterly, yearly cycles. So you have to have a really great sets of services, workshops, sessions with the clients, and see what type of services you are able to put it in a boundary and what other services you have which is based on the project, and you have to separate those two. So first of all, we have a set of services which you can deliver like in a weekly, monthly, quarterly basis, and you have the loose services which is based on projects and things like that. So we separate these two stuff, and always the client understand why we do that in that way. I think that's give you the possibility of this. It's not just giving you the possibility for having it like a monthly fee basis. It's just a side effect. The main effect is that it's scalable. Why? Because it should consist written processes, agendas for the meetings, and all the stuff. So when you are able to get those, that means you are able to train the next virtual CIO, and the third, and the fourth, and the sixth, and whatever, how much you want, how many you want. So I think that's the crucial element to create the services with processes and templates and everything, which can give the possibility to hand over to the other VCIO. Is it make any sense?
It does make sense, and it's good that you've used the example of the law firm or the business coach. Yep. Or whatever, and they all kind of follow that same progression. And I've never claimed to fully understand the legal profession or the coaching profession, but the term that I've heard often is a cap. So for each one of those virtual CIOs that you have, my question is, how many clients, what's their capacity? How many people can they actually look after before you need to put on that next virtual CIO in your organization?
That's really an awesome question. So first of all, we divide because of utilization. First of all, utilization is important. If you are a growing business in MSP, first problem you are going to have with utilization that you have a maintenance kind of job and you have project-based job, and usually and after like 15 people you have to divide your team on, you know, project-based people and maintenance people, because they are not able to juggle and do the maintenance and hop into the projects. It's just scaling reason. And usually what we are doing is that we not using only one virtual CIO for a client, but two. One of them is running all the projects. These are project guys, project management guys, so they have expertise on how to grab the projects. And the virtual CIO is doing the maintenance work. So this is really, you can pretty much predict the utilization. So based on those stuff, usually one virtual CIO who is not running projects, he can serve something from 15 to 22, 23 clients based on the utilization. The challenges are always the quarterly plans and the yearly plans. So the yearly, planning sessions, it's like a couple of hours. So it's more, the utilization of these guys are much higher. So what we are going to use usually is try to divide the clients on who has the year ending on, December or Q1, Q2, Q3. So you should do something like that to be able to, scale right. And you have to get a really, really, really great communication between the two virtual CIO who is doing the project job and who is doing the traditional virtual CIO job. So that's probably before you start a project, the virtual CIO, the traditional virtual CIO is doing the work, and after the execution, it's handover to the guy who is taking care of that stuff. And lots of overlapping, I know, but we've seen the same pattern that the virtual CIO was like juggling here or there and missing a couple of weekly meetings and monthly meetings, you know, because that was so much work on the project, and that's not healthy. So that was our observation. So you can count on 15 to 20 clients for a virtual CIO, and based on those terms, another guy, a kind of lower level guy, but it's a great project management guy, can work beside him.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. And do you feel that for organizations that you're teaching this process to, and I really think that it is an excellent process, and I'm looking forward to implementing it.
Cool.
Do you see that this really has to start with the owner taking on those 15 to 20 clients, or would you start this as does it depend on the size of the MSP that you're working with currently? How do you see this kind of being embedded and implemented?
You know, I'm a raised and born entrepreneur. I don't want to give someone a profession and tap on like having this glass ceiling that I have the maximum amount of, you know, money for like 20 people or something like that. So when we were designing this whole 7C approach, the scalability and the business building process was by nature there. And if you see the screen, I just try to show you this. So the current business model of the MSP1, I think we covered lots of times, but actually when you come to the MSP2 model, that's when you have these kind of sets of problems or issues. So go back to the question that like we would like to create a business, how we can get the scalability of the business. First of all, one place for building business is building recurring revenues which doesn't need any resource. These are most likely the marketplace portion. So in marketplace we are meaning what you were saying, that like cloud-based software service business. So you collect all the different solutions which solving different problems in your clients, and you just hand over these vendors to the clients and create the relationship, and then help them to work together, and probably you are in the middle, so you are managing this whole relationship. Lots of times, like a traditional VAR model, you can get some commission back, still you can give some advance to the client. So if you have like 20% commission from a SaaS vendor, which is not really unlikely, so it's pretty average, then you can hand over 10% for the client, so they are going to buy through you. That means you can raise up for the software service business, which is going to create like monthly recurring revenue for you. That's one thing. I think that's the first things, which is establishing something that you are getting passive income. The second one is that the virtual CIO, I don't think you should do that. You should be the owner. You can be part of the initialization of the bigger projects, going there when the yearly planning is taking place, when you know some big decisions. So you are going to be, how to say, hide behind the virtual CIO. So the virtual CIO can be a guy who is really decent, but you are able to help them to work. That means you don't need to hire yourself or hire a smart guy like yourself who can probably do another business on their own. So you are taking the risk that, hey, you are teaching this guy and he's leaving and they doing their own business. So you can have this kind of middle or high-end guy who can do the virtual CIO with you. Of course, you can have our materials and, you know, these teachings and certification stuff like that, but most likely you are going to be the business guy behind that. So you are going to see, hey, you know, this law firm need that kind of stuff. Next time you go there, make sure you are thinking on those. So that's your role here, the strategy guy behind, and you are juggling your 20, 30, 40, however many clients you have. But the virtual CIO is basically just doing the job, day job with your client. So that's how you are creating practice for your VCIO and business for yourself. And
so it's almost like retooling this, you know, it's retooling your account manager type person or technical account manager type person to be more, to follow more of a process.
Yes.
That fits this model.
Yeah, it's like, it's really interesting because I see this is a kind of unfair thing to be able to understand. Virtual CIO is half service provider, half sales guy. But he's paid by the customer to sell. So this is a bit of a pervert, you know, setting. So, but why? Because he's a CIO. He wants to help the client to get, you know, more competitive edge. How he can help? To use other vendors, other service providers, selling through sales. So it's not like a pushing sales, but he's managing this relationship. So basically, that's how you can grow, that your marketplace is going to grow and your bandwidth, how many vendors and how much, you know, traction you collecting and push through to your clients. And I think it's really important one thing to understand, why is it important now in 2014? Because if you see an average client of ours is like spending 15% of their whole software-based, you know, purchase through cloud and monthly service revenues, they have lots of, you know, licenses, legacy stuff. But in 5 years, most likely 90-95% of the software purchase will be through cloud. That means it's subscription, monthly subscription. So you have you have a really huge amount of budget which going to be covered by monthly recurring service business, and who is going to be the agent or the broker or the sales guy for that huge amount is going to make a fortune in every month till you leave. So it's like it's like a golden rush for a couple of years, and then it's like we redistribute the market from somebody to another people. So if you can take place, that's really awesome. And what I see here, that lots of MSPs are not waking up. In Calgary, we were able to go to many of the bigger MSPs market, and we have clients of theirs, and we are selling next to them to this stuff, and they don't realize what we are doing. So it's like pretty interesting that the really mature MSPs are not waking up, and you know, there are niche, you go there and you after that you can open up the stuff. So that's a huge opportunity now.
Okay.
Was it an answer for your question?
Yeah, I think it is. Going back to what I was saying earlier is that I think that every business kind of goes through this process. Yep. Where you've kind of got to build up the procedures, if you will, yourself.
Yep.
And then over time, you hope that you can install somebody that can follow that particular process. And I think that that's really true for most roles in a business, but the strategist, the CIO, the strategist, the consultant, the feedback that I often hear from other organizations in other industries that try to do something like this is that they struggle to find those people, they struggle to skill up those people, and then when they do skill up those people, they're almost autonomous themselves. They're like, well, I've got all the tools, I can go and be an independent consultant, for example, and go and do this myself. So what does end up happening is a lot of business owners decide to stay small and go, well, I've got a cap of, using your numbers, 15 to 20 clients. So you get to 15 to 20 clients, maybe you make yourself a good living out of that, but it's not scalable. You have to work. You have to do your 50 or 60 hours per week.
Yeah, that's the question is that if you are thinking on this is like a more like the business consulting business, you can treat these VCIOs as your partners. And as mm-hmm. as your partners, what you yep. can what you can learn is that what's their possibilities. So their possibilities mm-hmm. go alone, work hard, create a website, do more shittier jobs and more, you know, different yep. stuff. They have a yep. they can have a choice. If you can incentivize these guys based on different metrics, or even you can give them some kind of options on share of your business with, of course, buyout possibility for you, so you can get the get option to buy back anytime on a decent amount. That means you are yep. not taking a high risk, but you can grab those guys, and they are working for you. So my understanding here, Jens, is that you are going to train them. You are going to invest them to, you know, for example, for our materials, learning our materials, coaching, whatever they need to, yes. to grow. And that's a strategic decision how you keep those guys and how they are motivated to work for you, and how they are motivated working for you is working themselves, because these are smart guys. These are not really, yes. you know, it's, I don't say technicians, but these are not system administrator kind of guys. They probably can have a couple of clients and do their own, because they learn how to do that. The interesting stuff is the motivation behind would be create a good think tank people. It's like people management, how you make a place where they want to come and work in that environment. I think that's leadership. It's nothing more. If you don't want to share, then you are going to be alone. But that's, I think, in every field of the life is the same.
Sure. Okay. Yep.
So pretty much that's my message here, is that think on the business and think on the value. And what you can value here is how much does it take to get to the client on that level, which you are going to do the nurturing. And what's your business value now with full-fledged VCIO services when you are able to control the client's budget totally? So that, I think it's much more valuable for anybody who can invest or buy out you from this company than just having managed services, that's for sure. So sure. that's totally up to you how you build this stuff. As we have a roadmap for that, because you know you are asking this question, and lots of people asking this question after a couple of months, but we try to give you more comprehensive tools and education on this area as well. So that's just coming. Sure. Right?
Okay.
All right. So thank you, James, and that was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.